Welcome to the Words Matter Pod, a podcast dedicated to wordsmiths. My name is Akil. I'm here with shoe designer Brandon. How you say your last name, bro?
Bier.
Brandon C. Bier. Who are you?
Who am I? Currently footwear designer. And them, I'm just a conscious human being. I just care about, you know, a lot about enlightenment and that whole journey, but also as a creative and former athlete, you know, telling my story through those two lenses. That's really just been the heart of, you know, my passion. And what I do is really telling that story and just helping others believe and see beyond what I think society and certain cultural norms tell them that they should do.
Yeah.
So that's just been my passion. I'm really about that.
How do you, you know, how did you become who you are now? You have a background as a athlete, specifically a basketball player, and now you're a designer of many things.
Okay. Yeah, let's get into it. So how did I become? So I have to preface and start by saying, like, my perspective was always a little, I'm not going to say different. We all got our own perspectives. But I grew up in Germany for about 10 years. Then I moved to Maryland. So I was in that military circuit. But also I was able to be out of that military circuit because my dad is Danish. So I had that European, like, lens as well, but mom black, but she was, you know, a civilian working for the military, but anyway, coming up in that, always played ball, I was always of the culture, like, my favorite player was Allen Iverson growing up, so basketball was going to be in my hands, like, I had posters of Hakeem Olajuwon when I was born in 92, so I had those things going on. Michael Jordan was, he is, a big reason for why I started playing, as well as then coming, you know, I got to see Allen Iverson, Kobe, and all those guys. But, like, you know, the culture was crazy even over there. But then when I would come to Maryland, you know, in the summertime, that's where my mom's family's from. I would just more and more getting integrated with the culture, and just, you know, I knew that was me. My soul was just like, this is home.
Yeah.
But you know, still growing up over there, I'll be, you know, American friends who, you know, it's military, so they from here, they from, you know, everybody's constantly moving, so. But I always was into art, always drew in class, but I was always drawing shoes. So for me, it was like, it's, I didn't know that that wasn't normal, that you know, people say, oh, I know what I want to do. I knew what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I want to play basketball, and I want to draw shoes. So when it comes to, you know, coming into who I am, I just kind of had it laid out.
Mm-hmm. You know, why shoes specifically? What was going on in Denmark and in Maryland in the summers that you would come that would influence you? I mean, outside of basketball, what would influence or spark your interest in sneakers?
That's actually an easy one. So I remember when I was at summer camp, right? And this is even in Germany, right? Because it's a base. This is like still America. It's like little America, they used to call it. So there's a bunch of little bases in southern Germany. I was in Kaiserslautern, it's Vogelweg, Ramstein, that whole circuit, Landstuhl. So, you know, especially in late 90s, in the 90s and early 2000s, before the war, you know, before the stuff started happening, before they pulled troops back. I mean, it was crazy. It was like, but anyway, so they on base, they you know, it was people from New York, people,
yeah,
they had the 11s. I seen the all white 11s with the I remember it like it was yesterday. They came up with the Space Jam. I remember with my one friend, and this is in Germany, he used to play in Space Jams with no shoestrings. I was just like, bro, them things is icy. Like,
yeah,
I just love the design. You just fall in love with what it is, and that it's a physical thing that you can hold and touch and be a part. That to me is different from clothing and different from any other product out there, because it's like you can wear this and it's a form of art that you can actually express and maneuver, and it cost $100, like, or $150 or whatever.
Yeah.
You pay for it, it's somewhat affordable. So, yeah, that's how I felt about shoes. And then coming over here in the summer times, same thing. And then I would try to pick up a few pairs while I'm over here. I would come back over there, and they're like, oh, yeah, you got, where you get those 14s from? Anyway, a lot of it was Jordan, but it was also Iverson. You know, it was also K-Swiss. Like, it wasn't just, you know, that. Obviously, the Air Ones, that's a whole thing. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that sparked your interest in the design, but, well, in shoes. But what about the intricacies of just, and the details of being into the actual design? Like, was that just from you liking the shoes, or was it a certain moment or a person that introduced you to design specifically?
So that question is twofold. Before I actually knew that it was a profession, this was like my childhood range. It's like, let's say 12 and before.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was less about knowing what that was, that it was a profession. It was more, these are a thing, and I used to draw them. The more I replicated the drawing, I started going, oh, what if I just do this like that? And I just, what if I color this like that? I never seen 11s. This is before P's started showing up on the internet. What if I color this green and made it like a jersey that I had? Like, what if I? So yeah. I love the customization part of it. My mind just works that way. I got to make it mine. And that elevated into, okay, you know, Slam Magazine, they used to put out the Kicks thing, and I used to see stuff like, you know, some designers that I knew early, you know, Jason Maiden, Dwayne Edwards, who I eventually linked up with later on in Pencil, and that was like, that's incredible, we'll get into that, but yeah, Jason Petrie, who designs the LeBrons, like, they had those articles of these guys that designed, yeah, and they showed some sketches in there. So now I'm seeing, this is like what? This might be like 04, 05. It might be 05. So I collected those Kicks magazines every year, and I'm putting these things on my wall. Dwayne Edwards is featured in Soul Collector magazine and things like that. So I'm just saving all of this stuff. And I remember before I even was designing, I was like, you know, I was in art class. Art class was my favorite class in school. So I was drawing shoes. I started designing my own in these sketchbooks, as well as, you know, just painting and doing all these other things. But, yeah, so with Dwayne, I remember seeing videos of him. So he designed the Carmellos. Carmelo's my favorite player.
Yeah.
I was always. So we knew about the Mellos. I'm from Maryland, grew up in Maryland after I came from Europe. But so coming up in Maryland, you know, kick culture and basketball, that's like, mm-hmm, and, you know, we had Mello. So the 1.5s was just crazy. So
I remember then, those.
Yeah. So
that was his rookie year. He had his own shoe.
Yeah, yeah. Those were fire. So, yeah, being a big Mello fan, that shoe, I think Dwayne Edwards was featured in, they showed the sketch online. I remember I used to be on Nike Talk as well.
Throwback.
You know, Nike Talk, like finding sketches and stuff like that.
Showing so your
like,
age with that.
Oh, nah, yeah, I'm old, man.
Yo, Nike Talk, oh, man.
Yeah, so I'm finding these sketches, and I'm saving them, I'm printing them, and I've always been a little weird, you know, and you can go back to ask some of my best friends I grew up with, like, I used to print. I used to have binders and just print and use up all my family's ink in the printer to print every PE that came out. And I used to have these books, and I used to put these collages together, and I just used to spend all evening doing that. That's my middle school. That's what I was doing.
Did you know it was a profession back then? Like, this is, well, I guess you did because you were reading the magazines and you're seeing all these different shoe designers. But as a basketball player, did you ever have dreams of making it to the NBA?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think most kids. I think a lot of us do.
That play.
But I really was like, yo, it almost was like more or less making the NBA as much. It was more like I'm going to make it in something. Did I think it was NBA, you know, in my childhood? Of course. Then as I grew, I'm just like, I'm going to make this something. So we'll get into the basketball segment of things, but that was a dream. And I think I put a lot of work into it in my skill and my craft, and just I enjoyed the process too. Like I enjoyed going out there working on my game. Wasn't a lot of people doing that, you know. Mm-hmm. So wasn't a lot of people dedicated, unfortunately.
I didn't.
There was a few people out here. There was a few.
I just played. I'm like, yeah, no, you get nice and you just get nice. Yeah. Make it.
Hey. Nah, there was a. My dad was a bodybuilder though, so he was very instrumental work ethic. My mom, she's a singer, so she works hard at what she does. So my parents are very work ethic type people. It's not a surprise to be in the lane in the field that I'm in today. But you know, coming with that mindset, they push you. They're strong, you know, so they push you to be the best at what you do. So I was always trying to be the best, but I also had like a different spirit than because when I came to the States, you playing in Baltimore and DC. I mean, these kids could go, right?
DC area,
but I was mainly there. These a you know team. You know, I had one of my best friends play for Team Mello. Like, it was legit, man. So just to experience that, yeah, that to me is a success. So I got out of it what I needed to.
Yeah.
In the end of the day.
Outside of the sneakers, what was your personal style, like your like clothing style? What did you care about that as much as the shoes? You know, did you see somebody wear, you know, maybe, you know, back then it was jerseys and stuff and whatever humongous t-shirts we was wearing.
Yeah, we could pull up some photos.
Yeah, like did that influence, like, you know, was that corresponding with the love of the 11s when you saw them for the first time?
As a kid, no, I didn't care what I was always kind of fly with my kicks.
Yeah.
Like my mom, shout out to my dad. Like I have my 8s from when I was like 2. I forgot to mention that, but I had 8s. My dad bought me the 8s. They didn't know what it was, but they always they had me fly as a kid. I'm an only child, so you know, I was awarded that luxury. Only child, and you know, my mom knew. She just always had a great point of view when it came to fashion. I think she's, as an artist, she could have been a fashion designer. Yeah. Like she's
just creative all around.
She was on that yeah. wave. Yeah. So
and she's growing up in Maryland as well, growing up in America. Yeah. Yeah.
So you got that. And the interesting thing about Maryland, I'll say, is like, or the DMV area, is like, I could touch the South because my grandma and them, they're from Florida. I have family in South Carolina. I have family in the South. So I could touch the South, see the vibe, get the culture, soak it in, come back up north, right? I got the long tees before Lean With It Rock. I got the white, like, I'm understanding who T.I. is before, like,
yeah,
they get up there. So, and then, but you know, it moved pretty quick. But New York got their culture. I got cousins in Harlem. My whole family, like from my grandfather's side, like, so I had a unique perspective of kind of getting everything and then being able to synthesize it. And, you know, the DMV area is pretty much that way. You know, yeah. They're able to synthesize many of these cultural cities and put it together. New York does it in their own way as well, and Atlanta does it in their own way. But you get a unique one from that DMV area.
Because it's in the middle, like mid-Atlantic, really. So
yeah,
influences facts. From the South and the North.
Exactly. Yeah. But to get to your point about the jerseys, nah, when we come to school, I always was trying to Melo jersey, LeBron jersey. Yeah. Like, it was about, we all came to school with the jerseys, and I used to have a pair of shoes to go with it. So my shoe game was always like, mm-hmm. I used to save my lunch money and get like, I remember I had the low top Ace. That was like one of my favorite shoes I had. I could go on about this all day, man, but it was a time that, it was a pure time where I feel like the kids today they're not able to experience that in that true way of like,
yeah.
It wasn't hype. It wasn't, everybody wasn't on it for that sake. It wasn't resale. It was like, you want to go, do you really want to go to the mall, stand in line, get these and rock them? Like, mm-hmm. It was drug dealers who I looked up to that had the, in terms of fashion and kicks.
Yeah.
And it was like these Asian kids and some of these other ethnic kids that mm-hmm. just, they just came fly, bro. Like, they were the flyest kids.
Now it's everybody. And, yeah, and it's everybody and, you know, it's all influenced by the internet, so you can't even really tell where a person's from when they put on certain clothes. It's like we all kind of dress the same in a way. We all like the same things at the same time.
That's facts, man. That's facts. So that was a pure time, man. I miss it. I wish the kids today could feel what that was, you know, to really come to school with something fresh on. I think the kick game was like, I mean, even the retros that they were dropping was, they had some kind of authentic story to it. They had some kind of rhyme and reason, where I feel like today they're just kind of like, all right, let's put out Rainbow this and Rainbow B. And it's okay. I just, that to me, I think Ye is doing a good job. But again, for me, it was about expression, right?
Yeah.
So I could get a pair of 10s or a pair of 8s or something and have, I was able to pull out my expression through that and be unique. Like today, I can't. It's hard to do that. If I put on a pair of Concords, I look like everybody in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Like everybody in Harlem. Like
everybody, yeah.
To a degree. Now, there's a way that you can do it, but to me, yeah, I can't. I like to find my own rhythm in my stuff. I don't want to look like everybody else. That's just me. So, yeah, when it came to fashion, it was more or less like that.
I mean, as a designer of shoes, where do you get your shapes from? You know, the, like, how do you develop these silhouettes? Because they all have different, you know, like, your shoes, of course. Adidas is more minimalistic, but, you know, the three stripes. And then, but even on those three stripes, there's a little... the little ridges on it. And, you know, do you feel like you're coming up with original designs when you're making these designs, or do you feel like it's a culmination of everything that you've ever liked?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of what you just said. So trying to come up with something new. So when you get into the industry and you start designing, you have projects, you realize that, you know, for lack of a better term, there's nothing new under the sun. So what you create is essentially going to be what's in your subconscious. What are you looking at? Are you feeding your brain with new lines and new shapes and new sources of inspiration? But that was one of the things I could pick up early, because just by sketching on paper, you kind of, you see yourself going to these, oh, I did that shape here a lot. Or I like to do this counter like that, in the toe cap, or, you know, the eyes stay a certain way. Or I love this shape. I think one of the things most designers do, at least in the age of sketching, especially this Instagram age, is like, you draw this thin, pointy toe, and you got this, like, slick top. And it's like a booty with, like, a cage wrapping it or something like that. So, once you notice the algorithm of how this is going, then you go, well, what's new? What can I do to put myself in a position to create something new? That's storytelling. I think you mentioned that. So it's going to be storytelling. You want to just be ingrained in life. You don't want to miss, you want to be present. And then my whole, I'm like, I meditate. So I'm able to, like, slow down and see, like, things in life that are interesting, and you record them and you store them for later, certain ideas. But there is no rules to this. So if you can sketch it, if you can use it for photos, if you can, you know, because there's, you know, when I got into the industry, you know, some of, like, the premier designers don't even, well, they can sketch, but they come up with ideas straight from, like, putting a last on something. So sometimes it just happens in the factory, you know what I mean? Some of the most brilliant ideas. So idea is not, it's going to come about in different ways. You have to be willing to, if you want to come up with a new idea, you have to be willing to, one, lower your ego and not be like, oh, this is mine and I did this. And you have to be willing to, like, maybe see where something else is good. Where could it fit within your business or your look? Or, like, you could take an Air Force, like, you see people now, they take a common style and do some weird stuff to it, but it was a brilliant idea for the purpose that it serves. So it goes back to the consumer. It goes back to who is going to be engaging with what you're doing. That's how you come up with an idea, because just creating for creation's sake, it's really hard to come up with something if you don't have like a sort of a direction or guide rails to get you there.
So do you consider yourself a storyteller?
Yes, I do consider myself a storyteller, but that's like, I didn't realize that. I think storytelling when it came to product was always hard for me, at least in the beginning, because I could always sketch. I could always, you know, I had the artistic talent, but when it came to what the business needs, storytelling, marketing, things of that nature, it was like, oh, how do I combine this, you know? And I knew people that could do it very, very well, especially, you know, when you see some of the people at Nike and some of these brands, these top designers, you know, they could storytell really well. But so I was like, how do I get that skill up? But all the while, you know, the more I started looking at how I live my life from an artist perspective, I think of myself as an artist. I think we all are in our own way, but I love expression. I think I live for that. I think it's deep down ingrained in me. It's like, I don't know whether it's my sign. I can't tell you.
Yeah.
But I just know expression for me is like one of the most important things. Like I need you to feel this. It's less about my ego. It's more like I see things. Like, let's say, all right, I'm in Harlem and I see things. I want to communicate that through my lens. Like, because I also have the Europe lens of this and that. And when you have some of these things in your head, I just want to, like a musician, I just want to put it in a certain way. I just want you to feel it.
Yeah.
You don't have to like it. Yeah. You don't have to, but you will have an opinion. You know what I mean? So when it comes to footwear, I'm learning how to tell my story. I'm learning how to do it. I'm learning how to do it in my craft as well, which that wasn't easy. That's still not easy. That's something that takes a lot of reps. It takes a lot of experience to find your own sort of rhythm and rhyme to how you tell it, you know? So yeah, I'm getting somewhere with that, but you know, I do consider myself a storyteller.
I mean, with all the different inspirations that you draw from, what stories exactly have you told or you are telling or will tell in the future with your designs?
So, oh, that's a great question. So that actually, first part, industry, what I've done within it and within the design work that I do, which is not necessarily for myself, it's for other brands. I think when it comes to storytelling, that varies per project. So I'm always on like the internet, I'm always looking at stuff, recording notes about stuff, Wikipedia, you'll find stuff, Pinterest, all these things. So there's so many tools, you know, to kind of get something from. But, the story being told kind of just comes to me in that project. And then you lay it out in a way that is rhythmic to you. Like when you write, I'm sure there's a way that there's a rhythm that you get into. So it's kind of the same way when I see, and it's really all about making connections. Because I think if I see an idea, for me, I go, oh, what about that? And then I had this experience. So my story gets told through finding those connections. It's like a pinpoint. It goes, ding, ding, ding. Like it just starts to connect. And you kind of find a rhythm in that. It's like hooping. For me, to be honest with you, that leads me into the next part of it. It's like, I love hoop so much, but I don't like it in the same way that everybody else. Well, I'm not going to say that, but I love it like everybody else. But I'm also like, me and my boys, we talk about it all the time. And me, one of my friends specifically, we look at the game like he was my point guard.
Yeah.
I played Division II, but he was my point guard, and I was like a wing forward. But he saw the game a certain way. You know, our center saw the game a different way. Other forwards, other guards, other players, other positions, roles, etc. The way that basketball is played and sort of what I went through in that growing up, just how you play, how you move, athleticism, even to the pros now, like, I think Kyrie got his own rhythm and his own storytelling through his game. Mm-hmm. But, like, I love, you know, LeBron got his own thing. I love Melo because I think I related most to him as on the court. You know, he's very polarizing. And I love that. Like, to me, his game is sick. Like, especially being from where I'm from.
You mean, like, polarizing, like, him, like, stopping the ball a lot and...
Yeah, he's polarizing because of his ego, I think. But, and I can't say nothing about that. Like, it's probably it's true, you know.
And you need an ego to be successful as a basketball player.
I just love the story, man. Yeah. I think some people... But it's okay. Some people are looking for that Michael Jordan... this is not to talk about basketball too much, but this is more about the art of it. Like, and I'll bring it back. Some people are looking for that Michael Jordan, like, killer, dominant. And that's cool. That's your story. I love the artist of the game. I think Kobe did it both. He was an artist. And you could, your art, your game is going to show your art, which also inspired my whole creative mindset. But, you know, Melo is just, he's an artist on the court, right? Everything is beautiful. Kyrie is the same way. So all that to say, you know, how I played was very much like it was a dance, you know. And when you break down the game and you break down life and you see sort of similarities in the rhythm of the way things work, it's the same process that takes place in creativity, right? You may think like this. You gotta be a team player in this regard. You gotta have respect. There's all these variables to kind of adhere to or think about, and it's the same thing that takes place in a lot of things that people do. But basketball was one of those things where it was like, oh, this symbolizes life, in many different ways. Where I was able to take that into my creative process, and that's sort of where I'm gonna dig more into is, or what I'm already digging into is telling that work ethic. The way that things balance and harmonize, like doing that through my design, that's going to be my unique tale of how I do things.
Yeah, that takes me to my next question, because you spent your whole life playing basketball, an activity where footwear is so important to your overall performance. Do you approach design from a more utilitarian approach, or do you approach it from a more style approach?
Man, that's a great question. Well, I think since I went to Penso, I'm also being an athlete, I love function. So I was always trying to figure out, you know, once Dwayne and, you know, Jeff and, you know, even my bosses and different, well, the people that were like former Nike employees and stuff like that, they would design very, very much from this, more utilitarian, practical approach, but the style came too. The style came on top of that. And that's where the flavor was. I'm like, yo, you got to do it both.
Yeah.
I think some people go from a style perspective and do fashion, and people say, oh, he's a fashion designer. My goal was never to be a fashion designer. Well, I love fashion. I get more into it. I love expression, but I love if something can work. Because I think my father being an engineer really... And then also playing sports and stuff like that. I just love when something can work and it has the art to it. So I live my whole life like that. Like, so when you design something, it should work with the activity that you're doing. It should help you in that activity and not hinder it. But it should help actually advance you in that activity. And so we're thinking product here. And then we get into the whole realm of business, which again is serving your consumer. So that's kind of like my love for putting all these things together. So when it comes to utilitarian versus style, no, you got to do it all.
Yeah.
But I would say if I had to pick one, I would probably have to say function, man, because that's one of the reasons I love running shoes. Like, I'll go to stores, I'll buy running shoes and cut them up. I just love, like, oh, they put the foam like this, and you can see how to, you know, they use the TPU below here. Footwear is one of those things where I'm privileged to spend $100 and learn. I can learn about my discipline at an affordable rate.
Yeah.
And I can say, oh, ASICS did this shoe. Let me cop that and you know, break it down and see, you know, how, what are the rubber thicknesses? What's the, what type of, how does the tech work? You know, how does this work? Where is it placed? Why does it place there? Oh, okay, because, you know, when you toe off, you need this kind of cushioning to propel your foot. Like, so then you start, and then you go on YouTube, you can kind of break down things. So you can really take advantage of learning your craft with the shoe in hand and then being able to cut it open. So especially like Nike and brands that innovate.
Yeah.
You can learn about some of the more innovative processes. A lot of brands won't have the budget to do that. So you can take it, pull it down, research it, and then you, because when you communicate with China and stuff like that, you need to have references. So if you know, as a designer, this is real key, is you need to know what the material can do, what's possible, what's out there. Is there a new mesh, or is there something, is there some textiles that do a certain thing, or lighter, more, have certain tensile strength? Like, what are the capabilities of that material? What can it do? You need to have a range of what's out there and what's coming.
Yeah.
Because then that's your database. You can't stop with design. So, again, going, bringing it back, that's why I love it. Because, you know, function makes you have to stay on the ball. And it's like ball. Like, it's like basketball. It's like, yeah, you can't put your head down and the other team scored a run. Like, you got to stay on it.
Yeah.
So I just think when in fashion, I think it's more expressive. And it's more up to interpretation. I don't need you to interpret. This works. You know what I mean?
Do you, so you just, you know, have a bunch of shoes that you bought just for the purpose of research?
Yeah, I got a whole pile of it.
Wow.
So my grandma, I go to like, whether it's thrift, I go to, was it Salvation Army, like, go anywhere. But also, like, some of the shoes that I'll run in, like, I'm not, like, I don't hold back on buying shoes, like,
yeah,
because whether it's a basketball shoe or something like that, like, I study all different types of shoes. You never know what project you'll get. So for me, it's also a sort of process of sort of drawing to me what I like. But, you know, even in the design aspect, I used to just want to design basketball shoes. Now I'm like, you know, since I went to go design casual and dress at Kenneth Cole, that opened my realm up. Because now I'm like, oh, I want to do, especially where we're going, you want to be a designer that can do anything. So, yeah, I look at all different types of shoes. I want to see how it's constructed, you know, what type of last it is, you know, what's the shape that they use. And you can look at these things. Everything is a tool, an asset for you to be able to use. So the artistry is not, you're not limited to, that's why, you know, if you're an artist, maybe you're limited to the media that you use.
Yeah.
With this, I guess you can say that, but there's so many dimensions. There's the shape, there's color, there's material, there's different functional capacities that you can work with. I think that's sort of where I put my inspiration and love for what it is. So, no, I keep a bunch of samples and things and stuff that I've make and grab from the factory. I haven't been in a while because of the pandemic, but when I used to go to China, I used to travel relatively often, you know, every 3-4 months, I was in China for like at least 3 weeks. So I'll bring things back, material swatches, like all these things, and just look at it. I'm like, dog, I wish people could see this. So I try to post some of that stuff, but it's just phenomenal, that world of shoes. Like, I just, it's like heaven to me.
Yeah.
Being in a dirty factory in China is heaven to me.
This is some type of like order or, yeah, I mean, some people draw inspiration from like chaos in a way, but it's, you know, you can turn that chaos into a neat, organized design, like, with, you know, symmetry and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, let's talk about your, you know, who you've worked for and the designs that you've done for them. Like, let's, you know, start from the beginning.
All right, let's get to it. So I mentioned Penso and Dwayne, 2015. So that was after my basketball career was over. No NBA, none of that. Fortunate to play a year overseas with the Danish connection. So that was lovely. After college career, So I'll take you a little bit back to my college. So I played D2 basketball in South Carolina, but majored in art. My senior year, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna do two things. I'm gonna make a film. I'm gonna make a film with whatever film I have, you know, whatever the coaches are gonna give me. Because I was like a role player. It was very humbling. I could hoop, but it was just that whole thing.
You got to start over every level you get to, basically.
Yeah. And, you know, it don't prepare you. I think you could be good in high school, but you really do got to restart. So senior year, I reach out to a few designers, Dwayne being one of them. I got another, these are mentors until this day, reached out to a few others that responded, and then one of them, Quentin. So he runs Q4. He had like Langston Galloway and a few other players. He had Nick Collison, Nick right before he retired, DeMarcus Cousins. Like, he had a bunch of people on his brand. So he started his own thing. But so he had his own perspective on how he runs it. He's doing big things now. And then obviously, you know, Penso. So I reach out to Dwayne about how to be a footwear designer. And so I'm very naive at this point. But I'm hungry, man. Like, I know I'm going to get there. It's just how. Like, I know I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
It's been in my head forever. I just knew once basketball wrapped up, all right, let me try to get into this next thing. And I knew basketball would help me. I don't know why, but it was like I played the sport. So basketball, design basketball shoes or whatever. But
help you, like?
I knew it would help me as a designer.
Okay, yeah.
I'm developing the vision, I'm building it up. Because even in college, I was still drawing and learning. And all right, now I got Illustrator, and how do I, you know, work with these Adobe programs and stuff like that. So started to build that up, especially in my senior year. Took a class, because it wasn't a big school. So we're talking about 1,000 kids at this school. It's like a private school.
Yeah.
Small.
A little bigger than a high school, really.
Facts.
Double the size of a high school.
Yeah, most of the kids were athletes, and you had a seminary that was bonded to the school. So it was like a dual purpose school. So out in the middle of nowhere, so all I had time to do was focus. So, which I'm thankful for, because that gave me the quiet, or that gave me the solitude I needed to really feel the vision and start to dive into it, especially the way my basketball career went. Let's say that just went super well. Like, I might not have been like, oh, I'm trying to go overseas and really. But that was like, oh, I went okay. But
yeah.
It was like, nah, this ain't. Let me focus on the next thing. Where I think a lot of hoopers is holding on to the dream a lot later than when it is. So, you know, I start that process and I reach out. And I get people that reach back. But I reached out to like hundreds of people, man. From top famous dudes to, you know, because LinkedIn, it'll show their email. I was like, oh, this is a glitch. Like, I'm about to reach out to everybody. Or it's on their emails or whatever. And I would copy and paste the email and, like, you know, reshape it to the person that I was sending it to. So I was able to get a high volume of emails out. But, you know, it was funny, like, this is it's no knock, but two of the three people that responded were black. And what's funny is I ended up being a part of the first like black and brown class for Penso. It was one of the only, I think it's the only one he did. So that, you know, that's a part of my story that I can't leave out. I graduate and then a year later, I think I'm still in contact throughout the year. But I'm playing, I go to Europe. It's crazy. Like, I don't know how that happened, but I sent some tape.
What year is this?
This is 2014. And I was able to go overseas and play because I was able to get over there and stuff like that. You know, it wasn't much money and stuff like that, but they helped me get into school over there because, you know, being in Denmark.
Yeah.
So now I'm in school over there with a whole different education, which they do things totally different from American schools. I went from American school to, it's harder in a different way. They're not as like on you about grades and school. Yes. They're not as on you in the same way. Like, it's like, dog, do you really understand what we're doing? Versus, and this is one thing I wish, like, having experienced that, I wish they would do here, you know, in the States. Is like, I just come from U.S. school. It was all about, you need to crunch these, you need to like,
and remember all of this by this time.
Yeah,
so that you can pass this test. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm not going to repeat that because we already know how that goes. Yeah. So it's like, you're in this system. Of sort of like, one, you got this popularity contest going on. Then you got who's fitting in here, who's getting the girls here, who's doing this. It's just how it is, or vice versa. Like, who's at the part? I can only speak from my perspective when we're speaking from like what I experienced. And you know, for me, I was really, really focused on my craft.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I'm just speaking of the society that you're growing up in. It's grades, but it's also like your personality affects things. It's very political.
Mm-hmm.
Even from a school, growing up in school, from high school to college. But over there, like, just because I played ball, they didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Even though for me, myself, subconsciously, I'm like, oh, no, I play ball. Like, am I going to get extra tutoring? Or no, like, they didn't care. They didn't care. So I was like, I got to really learn. They didn't care the effort, because I used to, you know, if you put in effort, sometimes teachers will help you out. No, it's like, dude, you need to learn this stuff. So it was like, what? It was actually challenging. But so that's school over there, basketball season. I played for a year. After that season, I decided to call it quits, or I decided to move on. I decided to transition to the next phase of my life. So then I really start working on my portfolio right at the end of that basketball season. Right after I stopped that, I get an email from Dwayne about Pencil, apply for the class. And I come back to the States. This was like in the summertime, right before the next school year started up over in Denmark. And I was in Portland for like a month. So we're working with Nike people, Jordan team, Jordan. He used to work for Jordan, obviously, because he did the Mellows and stuff like that. And he did the 21, the 22s. So he showed us his process. And I mean, what he's doing is like phenomenal. I urge everybody to check out Dwayne and Pencil and what they're doing. They just got a school. They just opened up a school in Detroit. Like, it's stuff that motivated my path and what I'm from a deeper level than just design. But like, oh, no, you got to take this to a high level. So it held me accountable, and it kind of put something, it fueled my fire to like, no, you don't, you're not, it's not, hopefully you're going to get on. It's, you got to get on, because once you do that, then you could tell, now I can tell my story from my perspective and then bring some other flavor in there that I felt like is unique to me. But I've always been purposeful and wanted to help people and do all these things. But he was like, man, you got to help yourself. Once you put yourself on, then you can help others.
Yeah.
Can't help people if you don't, if you don't know it yourself. So just to say, that's how that process started. Then as school wrapped up, I applied for a Kenneth Cole internship. I don't even know how that got in, because I was just I just wanted to do Adidas and Nike and all these sport companies.
Yeah, but you had to broaden. That's how it is. You got to broaden, what you go out there for.
Thanks. So I think a friend of mine sent me the thing for Kenneth Cole, like dress shoes. facts. No, dress shoes. All right. And they reached back. And so right as school ended, this was 2017. Right as school was a 3-year program. So right as school ended, I come to New York, man. And it was supposed to be for like a temp job, but I knew like this ain't about to be temporary. Once you do something, you got to be at a level to where, they need you.
Yeah,
you got to make it like that. Because once I got the window to get in, I was like, nah, I'm not losing it. So that ended up working out, turned into a full time position, And they it was like the best place to start my career. It was the best place because of the range. You have I'm sitting by production, so I'm learning about cost, first cost, MOQs, tariffs. Then I'm learning also sitting by sales, so I'm learning about that. I'm learning about marketing. Marketing is down the hall. So it was, and by this time, Kenneth Cole had gotten smaller.
Yeah.
Because they used to be huge, and then they, you know, companies get a little bit more nimble over time, you know, especially with the market and the way things are. So as they were doing that, I caught a really perfect time to, like, get a good scope of, like, especially a glimpse of, because these people were there 15 and 20 years.
Yeah.
So I got to really ask them and sit and ask them so many questions. And that's one thing I'll say, questions. Mm. I was always good at asking questions. So I would just sit and ask these all these people questions and, like, go to marketing. Hey, why are you doing that? Why does this need that? And you start to realize what people know, what their roles are, which people are good at what they do, which people are not passionate about what they do, which people are passionate. And the people that are, you start to take cues from that. And so doing that, and then I also had I was grateful to have the bosses that I have.
Yeah.
They believed in me. They sent me to China early. And so I was able to, like,
how early?
Get the gun rolling. I think after a year of being there.
Oh, wow.
Less than a year. I was able to go over there, get in the factory, get some hands-on experience. And that changed it all. Because now you start, because it's like when you play ball, like, until you get in that game and really, you know what it feels like. Like, you know how to lay the ball up a certain way. You know how to, you know, front court action, like.
Yeah.
High, low. Like, you know the chemistry of the way a game works. Now you can start properly preparing or properly designing or properly playing because you know everything that's going into it. But it's all these steps. And that just gave me the foot in, right? So then I go to Steve Madden for a little bit, which was really it was interesting. It was he's a big name. Another dress shoe company, so I kind of moved laterally in that regard. Another fortunate to have that experience as well. Wasn't quite like Kenneth Cole in the sense of, like, they didn't move the same way. Kenneth Cole was, they moved the way that, like, it was a little bit more order and structure. This was more like a startup. Like, they moved, it's more New York. Like, they just moved, like, hey, we're going to do this, we got this order, yeah. Like, which is valuable to learn, too. So I was there, but the pandemic happened. Laid off. Incredible thing to go through. It was hard, but I also was like, yo, this is the beginning. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, this is it. So then I meet, I've already met Jeff Henderson, who I work with now, and at A&M, doing incredible things. I'm so excited about that and for the world to see a lot of that stuff that's going on. But then also Rolly Nation, I work with an Australian company. I still do part-time work for them. I worked for them for, I think, a good, like, 6 months, where I was focused with them. But, yeah, it was similar like Kenneth Cole, but we were able to do some innovative stuff. Mm-hmm. I was able to work on some ideas. So that's the picture. I know it's long-winded, but that's sort of like I wanted to give every detail that I could. You know, I think leaving one out just wouldn't help the story. So definitely grateful.
Working in these infrastructures and being a creative, do you think that the business and just the administrative, just the bureaucracy of it affects the creativity?
Oh, man. Yes, without a doubt.
Yeah.
But what I've come to learn is that there's beauty in that. And what taught me that? Basketball. So again, you're going to see basketball keep appearing because that is on my hip. Like, basketball is the wagon for everything that I've been in my life. Just like most people will say, that has been like the thing that has carried me. And like, hey, you could do this, you could do that. But it's not making it to the league or it's not like necessarily being the best or anything like that. But that's the story I want to tell. But anyway, going back to it is like bureaucracy. Yeah, you have to understand your role. You have to understand the business needs. you have to do your research on where your market is. What's the landscape? What types of products are out? What's coming out? What's been out? What's the history of? What's the history of? The business and industry that you're in.
Yeah.
So what? Why did Vans release their shoe? You learned that. Okay. Why was the Air Force One popular? When did it come about? Where was shoe production and manufacturing at that time? Manufacturing is a huge component to what you do. It's everything, because you need to know how the factory works, how you can make their job easier, because that affects timelines.
Yeah.
So you got to understand calendar, timelines, because you got to meet the demands of your boss. So all of these things that happen in industry is like every defender guarding you, or it's like your coach.
Mm.
It's your teammate over there that needs
a and you got to find touches. Ways to counter.
He needs his touches.
Yeah.
He needs his touches in the post. You got your coach over there. You're playing a team that's doing 2-3, but now they switched up to a box and one. Yeah, so it's really – oh, you got a score on the time. You got time on the scoreboard. You got refs over here. You got a crowd over here. So there's variables in life, right? How do you – the art of design is how you master all of that. And that is, to me, the beautiful thing. Now, if you get it, you should also – do your own thing and always create your own ideas so that when you're called upon, you can create whatever you want. But creating whatever you want is not, that's a result of all of that experience. You know what I mean? At least in my opinion, it's going to come out of everything that you've done. So you're going to do a toe box this way because you want it that way and you want cushioning set up a certain way. EVA versus rubber, like you're going to make these, your process is going to affect or be affected or affect what you're making.
It's by the business.
By what you experience, yeah. So if you don't experience the business part of it, that's cool. Then you can just create like Michelangelo or something like that. If you're one of those people that can do that, then that's cool. But to me, that's not where I get the love. That's not where I get inspired from. I'm inspired with the constraints.
That's profound, though, you know, to say that, being inspired by the constraints. A lot of creatives feel like they feel constricted, like they feel like they're being held down. But I mean, personally, you know, this is not about me, but I definitely understand that too, because I need structure and order in order for me to operate. And I kind of need somebody, you know, holding me accountable. And I guess that's definitely influenced from basketball, because you have your teammates and you have your coach holding you accountable. And you have, you know, you being a pro, you have the city that you're playing for or the town and the country that you're playing for holding you accountable, and the media, the press holding you accountable. So I definitely understand that, and I think that you saying that definitely will give a different perspective to creatives who feel like they're being held back by whatever forces.
Yeah, no, I mean, ultimately nothing should limit you. The best, and this is only my inspiration or being inspired from some of those that are at the highest level, yes, there are times where you want to create. I'm not saying that. No, there's times where I definitely feel like, they're not letting me do this, they're not letting me do that. And that product will be for that person, right? So you just want to make the best, you want to give somebody the best product that they want. So that takes a lot of listening, open, you have to, you know, active listening and things of that nature. But you also got to watch, keep your eye open, because sometimes, you know what I'm saying, people are going to want something. So this is a very huge psychological element to design, where you got to know what they want, where they're at. You got to know the other people surrounding them, what do they want, because you're gonna have a bunch of people that are gonna want to say, hey, let's do it this way, or yeah. do this leather. You're going to have people that are more sales focused. They don't care nothing about the design. They just want a certain price. Certain people just care about numbers and how much did it sell, and it should look like that thing that sold a million pairs or whatever from a different company. Yeah. So you gotta understand where people are coming from. Like, where is their mindset on a particular thing? Are they thinking about numbers? Are they coming from? And this comes from when you ask enough questions and you just observe enough. You can, or you know, meditating on your environment, just sort of being present. You can see, like, people. It's not that hard to see what people want, or sort of the what they followed. Oh, they went to that school, so they think this way. You can't be black and white, but you can sort of gather these clues. So you got to do that, but you also got to know your consumer. What do they want? What are they thinking? Take these things, but then still go with your gut. You still got to give them an option that's out the box, and you got to do something that's true to you and what you feel like. Always do that, but give them what they want. Bake the cake that they want.
Yeah.
But then got this, there's another cake over here that's like, oh, no, I decided to make this thing icing a certain way. And it's like triple. They can be like, oh, what's that? So this is psychology, man. And so you just got to know how to maneuver that and finesse it. It's a finesse game at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But you should care about it at the end of the day, too. So what you put into that product should be love and should be care for that consumer at the end of the day, because that's going to stand the test of time.
How do you retain your individuality when you're on a team? And this could even go back to basketball. Like, how do you know certain players have to withhold a lot of their individual ability to be a part of the system? How do you retain your individuality as a creator when you're in these constraints of work? And I'm sure you've been on design teams.
No, so great question. You know, that's, again, these are layered. It's layered because you got to understand time and place. You got to understand when it's time to speak up. Got to understand where you, how long have you been in this team? How long have you, if you're a freshman, you shouldn't be talking, right? But if that's your attitude and if you got something to say, all right, maybe you say it, but you got to back things up. So as long as you show respect to your team and you show respect to your leaders and the environment that you're in, you show respect to the game, you give it your all, this is anything that you do, then I feel like if you have something to say, you're more likely to be heard, which that's going to encompass your individuality than if you're lacking or showing up late or your grades aren't right or you're arrogant, you don't show. So it comes back to your character. Your character, if it's true, and you're tough and you do all these things, but you're still respectful and humble, you're more likely to be heard. Everybody's not the same. We're going to have different. Sometimes, you know, to have that Kanye, you got to be that, right? So that he's going to be heard regardless. So if you that type of person, you be that, right? But for me, that's at least my approach, is like, you give respect to get respect. But you also can't be You can't be soft in regards to like, nah, you got to give it your all. You got to you got to show that you're willing to fight for this idea or fight for
being assertive,
the team, or and you don't got to be perfect. This is not about perfection. So I felt like that worked a great deal. Going back, I say respect again. Say your pleases and thank yous. I'm big on that. You don't got to overdo it, but. Yeah. You know, just show people what time it is. Just show people the appreciation that you feel like you would want. So when it comes to individuality, I say the prerequisite is doing those things. It's character.
Yeah.
And then that will allow you the gateway to be yourself without sort of feeling like you need to bend to anybody's way of being. So I think that's it. And how you start is how people will treat you. So if you notice, like with our parents, sometimes we struggle with our parents because like they know us from a kid and like we change. And I'm like, I'm not that same kid.
Yeah.
So establishing that respect is very difficult. But if you start, so if I start something with the team or group, if I start with like, no, I don't appreciate that, or I would like something to be done a certain way, or, and I'm at a level where I'm able to do these things, then you be upfront about that. So it's back to very basic principles, but that's how you maintain your individuality. It comes back to these things. You got to just know how to maneuver in what you're in. Sometimes you just got to know when to talk, when not to talk.
Yeah, it's a skill.
Being quiet is probably the most underrated factor in it all. Even me, sometimes I talk too much, but when I'm in a setting where like I'm learning about design or I'm asking questions, I'm very quiet, and that's people love to give you information, especially stuff that people will love to help you. Like, listen. If you're willing to listen, if you're a good listener, I think people really respect you for that as well. So I can't say that enough.
Yeah. You spoke about the work environment, working in Kenneth Cole and working in Steve Madden. What about the athletic companies? Or Timberland's not an athletic company, but the athletic companies like Under Armour and Puma and Timberland, what are the individual differences in the creative processes and the work environments with the projects that you've worked on with those companies?
Okay, so, yeah, I remember Pencil, we worked together with Under Armour on a project. So I was able to see their office in Portland and see how they worked. I never worked for, like, a sport company. I worked with them sometimes and even consulting, but
it's like a third party.
Yeah, I understand their project setups and I understand how they move and how they work. It's very much different from, I would say it's more standard corporate, but they also have a different way that they do things. There's more processes in these companies as far as laying out a brief and making sure that brief hits a certain price point. They solve a certain problem. Like they do a lot of work to set up what you're doing because you'll, depending on what department you're working in, what I understand is you'll be working on something it's a product that's going to be launched. You're spending a lot of time on that one running shoe because that's going to be the premier product. So there's more detail. You got to think of the functionality and the way that it works, and how are you innovating and finding solutions for something from a functional standpoint? Is it solving the needs of the customer that you're, briefing? Then you got to think of the price. You got to think of who you're working with, your vendors, and you got to storytell because they got a whole marketing thing that they got to pull out. They're going to take your project and they're going to base it off that. So you got to sketch, you got to ideate. So that's that process. So you might have a shoe that's like, that might be like 18 months out. Or you might have a project that's like, it might be like 18 months before that project releases because minimum 12, for that project to release. So you're spending more time on the actual details of it all. Like what I know from the other aspect of, or the other side of the industry, like working for the Kenneth Coles and especially Steve Madden, they move very quick.
Yeah.
So that's, you got to be organized, but you also, you're working on several projects at once. You might work on a project that's a long-term project, but you're also working on, you might have like 8 or 9 other things on your plate, maybe more. So you got to be able to pump stuff out really quick. you know, make stuff move. And all right, because you're going to get stuff coming very fast because they make changes based on orders. So you might get an order from Macy's and, oh, they want this change on this leather. Mm. So you got to send that email out to China that night before you go home. Mm. All right, we need to start sourcing some type of suede. They want suedes at this price. So it's very quick moving in that regard. So it's not necessarily about function. It's about style and material and vendors. It's about the merchandising aspect of it all. So you got to, you're not working on too many projects that are 18 months out. Where the bigger companies, no, we're just hiring designers to work on this focused thing. Mm. And I've experienced a mix of all of that. I think that's the brilliant part. I think a designer should know how to deal with everything. So
yeah.
I'm still working on enhancing my process.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sort of the rhythm of those two worlds.
Have you ever designed something and then when it came out, the color was off and the you know, it was out in the stores and everything and online and the color is off and the material's not what you expected it to be?
Facts, man. That's a fact. But you had other side too where it's like, oh, this thing came out a little better than the sample.
Yeah.
But they're making so many pairs, especially when it goes into production, which is hard, by the way. It's like, for a project to go to production is like it's just, that process is a long time. Even in the dress shoe realm, like, there's so many changes and so many voices, you know, before you get to that point, it's like, you know, once you see it. But a lot of times, there's things that happen that you don't see, and then, you know, whether it's the production team or you have sourcing, and they may switch a developer, or they may switch a factory and move it to a different factory for a different price. And you don't know any of these things. You're not in that room, you know what I'm saying, to really see these things. But they needed to move it for whatever reason. Maybe it's relationship. Maybe they couldn't get the price. You see it in the store, and it's like this whole different factory. You could tell when a different factory did it. Like, you could look at it. If you really looked at some of the Jordans, you could be like, oh, no, these ain't the same factory. It's like the OG. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The shape be off. Like, when they retro, yeah, for sure. They might retro something that they retroed. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Facts.
The shape.
That's a fact. And they're different factories have different capabilities. So, you don't just see color changes. You might see a pattern look a little off. You might see it look a little bit longer in the ice day and toe box a certain way. So, or it may not be lasted right, or the factory, like, when you look at production, your sample could look good, but there's so many changes. But, yeah, some of those are annoying because you just want the customer to see the best version of what you did.
Yeah, so. But it's not, you know, I guess that's like just the idealistic, creative part of your brain that isn't necessarily that realistic, I guess.
Yeah, it's aspirational.
It's aspirational. Yeah. Does it ever get exhausting giving away your ideas to different companies and not having your own shoe that you design yourself?
Does it get exhausting? I would say I've tried to stay out of that thinking because every time I get to work on something, I look at it as a repetition. I have I have no shortage of ideas.
Yeah.
So for me, everything that I work on is a chance to improve my process. So my ideas that are flow from that point are going to be better because I've gotten more reps in. So when I do get the chance to do my own thing, I will have a better sense of what that should look like
and
how I want to do it. So
yeah,
I don't see it necessarily as a shortage.
Mm-hmm. Do you incorporate the technology in footwear that you've always wanted to have in footwear that you've worn?
Do I incorporate? So I try to. If I have the chance, then I do. So I love the Presto before it got, like, released and hyped.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that collar shape, sort of the vamp, how it looks. I think you try to incorporate little cues and stuff, but I'm also open to other things coming into the mix. But, yeah, I think by – I think that's a subliminal thing. I think deep down you incorporate.
What yeah, you like. I naturally.
You mm-hmm. like a collar shape. You like a high stay. Like maybe you like how like a AF1 high stay kind of zigzag. So like if you do a cup sole, you might do something like that. Yeah, you incorporate it, but you don't necessarily think about it. You just do it. Like I love a gum bottom or something like so. I
yeah, might
just,
yeah.
Oh yeah, I just put gum like. Mm-hmm. like, yeah. I mean, I think you do those things. I love the. Maybe the toe shape of a Yeezy, like, so yeah, I think these things come out.
Do you think that footwear design is bigger than aesthetics, and even functionality, bigger than aesthetics and functionality, and can serve as a greater purpose or serve a greater purpose to society?
So functionality over aesthetics?
Like not even that, but like bigger than functionality and bigger than aesthetics. Just that shoe in general, do you think it can serve just the idea of the shoe, the story that it tells, can serve a greater purpose?
Yes. But that comes down to the storytelling. So in the end, you could have any shoe. If people are buying it, it's a success, right? Mm-hmm. Quote unquote. So it just depends on how you shape the marketing for it. How you storytell, where did the idea come from? I think who's involved, what did the shoe mean? What did it come about? Like, let's just say, I don't know, I'll be very extreme. Like, what if you were in, like, some harsh condition or situation where, like, that shoe kind of takes inspiration from that and...
Mm.
Aesthetically, it may not look good, but it kind of represents something. So I think the symbol of what that could be, or maybe somebody had it on in some like special event or a special game, and it means something. So I think this, if we get out of that, I think we talk more of the symbology of what it could be. And that could be a range of different stories. It doesn't have to be a specific type of story.
It's just,
that could inspire it. I would say that could be a bigger purpose. Or, yeah, so, like, look at the Dornbachers or the Dornbacher, you know, however you say it, where the kids are able to draw, you know, kind of color their own J's. Like, to some, it's still an aesthetic. It's hard to get away from function aesthetic because it has to work.
Yeah.
And it needs to have a look. But the look may not be, like, harmonizing. You know what I mean? So, but the story behind that is, like, these kids get to design a shoe that are, like, you get to tell these stories. So I think so.
What about like with Nike ID and like a lot of different shoe companies have their own version of that where you can, you know, user can just add the colors to the different blocks of the shoe that they want and order it. When you create something, do you have certain colorways in mind, and you know, with the your own customization, you know, people having their own DIY customization of a shoe, you think that kind of cheapens your original intent?
No, I think if, like, let's just say they're wearing my design and they do it their own way, I think that only shows you a nod to, like, they want to use your design for something. That's an honor, number one. I haven't had that yet. It's coming. I know. Just putting that out there. I mean, just manifesting. But quick question. How many Nike ID shoes have you made without order?
Yo. Damn, hundreds.
So, yeah, I think when it comes to Nike ID, I knew he was going to say that because I did the same thing. So... when it comes to that, it's like just looking and seeing and playing. It's the playful part of it. So when you look at that, I don't think that's limiting at all. I don't think that is a nod to like somebody else's point of view on color and stuff like that. So for me, I definitely do color. I definitely enjoy maneuvering, I enjoy the coloring and materialization of a product. I don't tend to focus on one I focus actually more on the design more than the color, because. But when I if I'm called on to do color, then I do something that makes sense, you know,
yeah.
for purpose. But I'm more of a practical person when it comes to color. I might do a vault. I might do
yeah.
this. I'm very like product person when it comes to color.
Earth tones.
Yeah, stuff. I'll do like this. But you also got to look at assortment. I'm thinking of like who might need this. Who's gonna need the black, the white? All right, if we're gonna do one other, oh, maybe it's all navy, or is it some kind of other darker earth tonal, or is it some kind of like, I don't know, some kind of like putty color or something.
Yeah.
Like that. So you think about stuff like that and how it's, and if you study how brands do it, there's always like one pop color or max two pop colors with, you know, I like the formula of it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so when I think of color, I look at it like formulas.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want it to work for the market. I'm trying to make it sell. You know?
Yeah.
I do think about that. So
yeah.
Nike ID is not necessarily something that when I think of color that I'm really into, because I think that's more of the personal, like, oh, you get to color it. I'm more like, I'd rather just buy the fresh color that they release.
Yeah, me too.
Rather than make my own, because there's a lot of options to be able to choose something that's like swaggy. So I'm gonna find something that works in my own way. So mm-hmm. plus, I like original colorways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And it just doesn't. It doesn't. I don't know. I don't know if it would feel the same like that. I designed it. I don't know. Maybe it's like, maybe I'm just programmed. Maybe that's not a good thing. You're just programmed to just buy whatever they put out there for you. But
maybe, yeah. You know what I mean? Maybe. But it still had the nostalgic aspect of it, the storytelling.
Mm-hmm. What designs and purpose did living and growing up in so many places, I don't know if I asked you this question already in a different way, but you know, what designs and purpose did living and growing up in so many different places do for your artistry? Because you grew up in Europe and in Maryland, and you know, you moved to Maryland when you were young, but still old enough to really remember Europe. And then you played ball in Denmark, and then you lived in New York. You live in New York now.
Yes. So just to make sure I got the question right. Yeah. So like the balance of it all?
All of those places, like, what in each place that you lived in, what specific things did you get from those places to put into your designs?
Oh, wow. So, all right, so we discussed the Danish aspect. So that's a Nordic country. It's very, they have a Scandic design. Like, their design is very minimalist.
Yeah.
But they have their own approach. If you go to IKEA, you can kind of get a sense of like what that is. Just looking at like how they dress, it's very dark, it's very tonal, it's they follow a fashion sense, but it's different. So you have that approach, but you also have America and the expression of like what it is, and like just the, everybody has their own saying things. You have, you know, different regions. I think of America as more like the regions. So I look at the New York swag, which inspires me. You got the jeans, the ripped jeans with the Air Force 1s, and you know, it's expressive in a different way, but it represents the culture in which they grew up in. A lot of cities kind of I see similarities in the cities, because like I'm not too far from Baltimore, so they have their own thing where they had the Nike boots and stuff. DC had Nike boots, like, but they do a different thing. So in DC, all the kids, I mean, going to high school, you had the kids that from DC or like had the from PG, they were transferring, but they all had some type of North Face, so a Steep Tech,
New Balances,
like New Balance, 992s. I even had a pair of 992s at one point. But it's a whole different, like Wale, like that whole vibe is like DC, you know, that whole vibe, Sobeados and stuff like that. people from Maryland know exactly what I'm talking about. But it's like that whole wave going along with the way that they talk. And you have Baltimore, they have their own thing.
Yeah.
It's very Nike Boo. It's very, you know, it's almost similar like Philly, you know, the way Philly is. And in New York, to a degree, it's a gritty.
But gritty it's dope. Aesthetic,
it's
yeah.
It's dope, though. It's dope. When you appreciate it for what it is, it's dope. Like, and then, you know, going to the South, man, I've been down there. It's a whole different wave. It's more like really what you see. Nothing different from you already pretty yeah. much can know, like, the wave that the South is on right now. But even before, like, I just the long tees and so these things come into my design, I guess, because I think it's more internal, man. I don't necessarily think that. The only thing that I would say I can take from these regions is, like, it depends on who my customer is and who they're trying to reach. And then if I go, oh, this look could match this, where this track, because there's similarities here. I see a lot of America, I see a lot of regions aspiring a certain, like, look that I've seen in Europe that they do.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe there's a reason for that, because America kind of aspires this European flavor a little bit sometimes. And just like vice versa, they aspire to be American. They aspire to be West Indian. They aspire to be African and all these other.
Yeah.
So America looks at the European aspect of France and fashion, like look at ASAP and stuff like that. So,
like idolizing in a way.
But USA has their own way about it. So I think for me, it's more like, all right, who's the customer? What's the way? Where are the trends going? Then I can see, like, it allows me to have that database to pull from information and say, oh, no, I seen that look. They got this type of look and these colors and this stuff. So it helps the database of what I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm. When people see a product you designed, regardless of what it is, what do you want their initial reaction to be?
It's like I said, it's not words. It's like, it's something in their eyes that lights up. It's like when you hear, like, when you heard that Hove song.
Yeah.
You heard Wayne when he was, it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Like an intangible feeling, like you can't even put words to it.
Yeah, no, it's as a creator, you know what that is.
Yeah.
And there's like, oh, this is nice. No, that's not.
Yeah,
you know you don't mean that. so I already know, like, you don't like it. But that sometimes I like things that people don't like. Mm-hmm. So it's cool. It just depends on how you look at it. Sometimes I'm proud of something, but it's like, I don't care if anybody likes it. Most of the time, there's things that's like, oh, this is okay, and they may like it. So it's not something that you can fully have a grasp on all the time, but... Yeah, there's a look and there's a sensation of like, oh, wow. And it could be through text.
Mm-hmm.
It could be through, you know, but the reaction is usually immediate. It's usually like, it's usually something.
Yeah.
It's a subconscious like.
Like a, ooh, and then, but there's no, a lot of times when a person has that reaction, they don't even have any words. It's just, you know, an onomatopoeia.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just like anything else, music, sports.
Yeah. So just going back to basketball, just being an athlete, I mean, what do you tell young athletes who feel like they don't have to cultivate or maybe don't even have the resources to cultivate skills outside of their respective sport? Because fortunately, you had something other than basketball that you loved. You know, you loved design, you loved footwear design, you loved shoes. And, you know, maybe if you weren't going to be successful in basketball, you know, not saying you had a backup, but you know, you develop, you always drew and you, bless you, you always drew and you always had something else that you look forward to doing, you know? So what do you tell these young athletes?
That's a great question, which is a big part of why I love telling my story or, you know, a big aspect of that, but... I would say it takes exploration. It takes a willingness to be open to different things. You know, I think one of the things that a lot of college athletes get to do is experience a different, you've been in college, like not even athletes, just people in college, what you get to do. What people meet new people, different type, they hang out with different types of people that they normally wouldn't be around in their own culture, you know, at home.
Yeah.
And it just opens you up to new things. So what I would say is keep an open mind. Be aware of what makes you tick, like in a positive way. Like what makes you smile? You know, what are the things that you're drawn to? It doesn't have to be a specific career or job. Especially to where we're going, I think as a society, it behooves you to kind of figure that out so that you can create that lane. You know what I mean? So it might not be something that's already created yet. You know, a lot of times we're looking for these jobs and things. It's like, it needs to fit this certain mold. A lot of times it might not fit that mold. You got to create it. You got to create that own lane. And what happens is you just putting that one step forward and the next step forward and reach out here, figure it out here. It's an energy and momentum you have to put forth. If you don't put forth that, you're not going to figure it out.
Yeah.
I was lucky, so I'm not going to sit here and say I understand that completely, but I also have friends that I talk to every day that they're still looking for their passion. And what I tell them is,
that play basketball still?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, yeah. But I think it's more or less do what you can in a moment. It's more of a mental ethos. It's more of an emotional and mental ethos that you should take part in, understanding. It's less about the success of whatever job that you're at. That's not important. What matters is, oh, when I do this, I feel good. Or I'm going to go try going to this museum today. Or I'm going to go try doing this activity and, you know, hang out with these new people. It's more like get invested in your own self from a mental, emotional, spiritual standpoint. Because you got to go you got to begin foundationally to sort of build out from there. So if you bring it to that base, you'll be able to pull something out of there. But it really is not, it really has to start there. Fortunately for me, I had something and my base and foundation was attached to it. Now, some of us may find, like I was talking to my homeboy, like, you know, from a relationships, like I've spent most of my time doing this. I'm still focused on this. I've never really, obviously you've been in some relationship, but I've mostly been focused on my career and passion and the other stuff. I'm like, it's gonna come. It's gonna be good when it comes. But whereas some people, they may find their sweetheart at in high school. Everything ain't the same path for everybody.
Yeah.
Right. So when it comes to this, it's the same thing. This is the advice. It's the same thing. Like finding your other half or whatever, you know, you wouldn't force that. You would stay focused on you.
Yeah.
Right? You would hone in on who you are first. So it's the same thing with a job. Like, you want to hone in on who you are, your interest, and figure these things out. So the process should be the investment. That's already half the battle.
Yeah.
It's looking at the process like, you know, this is something that I'm invested in.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is it comes as icing on the cake, the job, the career, and whatever aligns with that. You know what I mean? But the heart and the passion of what everybody has access to. That, you know what I mean? So that's what I would say. It's more of a perspective shift and less of a three-dimensional job, world, physical. This needs to be that type of thing. No, like it starts in your mind to then go, when I do this and I go, when I work out, I love communicating with people when I work out and I love listening to this. And all right, so there's these points, there's these things that align and connect. All right, what does that mean? What did that mean with that? And every person will be able to see, like, they have their own take on these connections, and then they could possibly create a business idea out of that or a career idea. But the ideas come from that mental process.
Yeah. You ever felt like you had to pick between basketball and design?
No, I never really felt like I had to pick because it just kind of, again, I got really fortunate that once basketball, I felt like it was up, but decided to hang him up. Desire was like, all right, let's go.
Yeah.
So I never really had that, like, sort of that friction there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, I mean, the fact that you felt free, though, that's very important. Because a lot of people just feel like they can only do one thing. And it's sad when a person doesn't feel like they have options. What's next for you?
What's next? What's next is honestly getting into my own thing. I will always, you know, be involved and work in footwear and stuff like that. So I think for me now, too, is still finding myself. Like, you know, I'm still doing that. You know, even though you have a career and a passion and that's what you do, it still is not me. Like, I'm still somebody. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, you're more than your career. You're more than your skill. Mm-hmm.
So similar to what you're doing now, I want to build that for myself. So I want to build a platform to be able to tell my story. But it might not be through I don't know what form it's going to take place in. But it's definitely inspiring others, creating a platform for that, creating a platform for more community, more connections, whether it's through music. I don't know what it is yet. But maybe it's through design. Maybe it's my own product. But more community-based, more it should be a harmonizing thing versus product for product's sake, if it's a product, right? So it's sort of figuring out my world.
Yeah. Last question. Why do words matter to you?
Words matter to me because you can't take them back.
Yeah.
Can't take them back, man. So I'm very critical. Well, I'm very critical on what I say. I try to think a lot about how I communicate. But also, like, you know, I'm very careful of what I say.
Yeah.
But I think words touch a very deep part of the subconscious. So you just want to, I'm big on affirmation. So how you talk to yourself is key. You know, a lot of times in society, we communicate a certain way to ourselves that is limiting. And I think, like I said, going back to what I want to do is to start changing that dialogue, especially as a community. My ethnic community is like, we need to start going back, changing our language
from
what's out here. So that's why words matter.
Yeah, man. Bless you.
Allergies hit me.
Yeah. See you, man. I have an allergy attack. But it's a perfect place to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Brandon, CBR, for
my man,
for coming here, coming down to Words Matter Pod. And, man, thank you for everything you do, everything you contribute through art and design, and looking forward to seeing what you cook up in the future. And, thanks again, man. Words matter.
Appreciate you, bro. We got connected through basketball. Yeah, so, like, look at that. It's funny, man. It's funny. It's like that game. Like, I talk about it a lot. I'm so appreciative for it, but it's brought me all of my relations, like friends and, It's paved the way for my whole life, so I'm just thankful, man. But thankful, and this is only the beginning to, I'm sure, a wonderful union, man. So, like, anytime you need me, reach out. Let's tell these stories, man. I think these need to be heard, man. I'm definitely passionate about that.
And
this platform is such a great,
thank you,
a great platform for people to be able to do that, man. So, very grateful for you to have me on.
All right, thank you. All right, man. Words matter. Make sure, I always forget to say this, make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. Don't just rate. Like, comment, and subscribe on YouTube and Spotify. Follow me, Spotify. And see y'all later.